from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. That's the song Strike as One by the San Francisco band Soltron, and one of their band members will join us in our next hour, along with a panel of other Bay Area artists to discuss how the local arts community is responding to Donald Trump's presidency and a turbulent political climate. We'll also hear about a new project from KQED Arts called First 100 Days, Art in the Age of Trump, all coming up next on Forum after the news.
Faster than the speed of light, brighter than the sun. Fall Babylon, a new chapter's begun. Usher in a new sound, together we become Soltron, we strike as one. Faster than the speed of light, brighter than the sun. Fall Babylon, a new chapter's begun. Usher in a new sound.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. As President Trump nears his seventh week in office and budget cuts to the National Endowment for the Arts loom, we want to check in with some Bay Area artists this hour about their work during the Trump presidency and discuss the connections between art and political activism. We'll also talk with KQED's arts editor about an ongoing KQED arts project called First 100 Days, Art in the Age of Trump, which profiles local artists and their responses to the current political climate. Let me tell you who is joining us in the studio for this Forum Hour. Chloe Veltman's here, Senior Arts Editor of KQED. Good morning, Chloe.
Hello, Michael.
Welcome, and also welcome back to Forum, Mark Bahmoudi Joseph. He's a poet, dancer, chief of a program in pedagogy for the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. And latest multimedia theatrical experience is called Pelota. It's a combination of music, dance, and spoken word poetry, and we welcome you.
Thank you. Peace.
Good to have you. Peace indeed. Ingrid Rojas Contreras is also with us in studio, Bay Area-based writer, literature critic, and co-founder of 100 Days Action, which is an initiative around inspiring people to take political action through art-related activities. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Daniel Riera, who's here with us as well, music director and flutist and electronic wind instrument player with Soltron. That's a local band that fuses the sounds of salsa, hip-hop, samba, and rock. Hybridized music. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael.
Good to have you all aboard. Chloe, let me begin with you. Let's talk about what KQED Arts is doing. We're talking about really something inspired by the 100 days of the Trump presidency, but 100 days of art.
Indeed. Well, as you said, Michael, this is an attempt. It's a content series. It's highlighting the responses of artists and other creatives during the first 100 days of Donald Trump's administration. 100 days, of course, being the time frame when a president's power and influence are supposedly at their zenith. So since Inauguration Day, January 20th, and through the first 100 days, I think it's April 29th, we're publishing a consistent stream of related content as part of this effort. We're doing it across all of our platforms, audio, video, photo and written pieces.
And what are you discovering? I mean, is there any kind of general sense of how artists are influenced by the Trump administration or how they need to express themselves in different ways?
Well, we're focusing, of course, on the Bay Area where we are, but also because this part of the world has such a strong legacy of marrying art and political activism. So what we're really seeing is a fire hose of artistic response, just like the fire hose of news that's happening. And it's happening in many, many different ways. People are expressing themselves, for example, in underwater dance pieces all about ocean pollution. And they're doing it as monologues, like Mark here did a monologue called 100 Days Drumpf. Is that, that's the title that we featured? I mean, it's all over the map. And there's Ingrid's project all around basically getting people to create actions around art, so going out and doing things in response. Well, she'll tell you more about it. Anyway, there are lots of different things
that are
happening.
Is there more of a sense also of despair, especially in the wake of likely cuts from NEH and NEA, and for that matter, CPB, the Corporation of Public Broadcasting?
You know, I'm not sensing a lot of despair. I'm sensing a lot of fight.
Resistance?
Resistance, excitement. Yeah, I mean, you know, of course, it's tempered for the most part by you know, not the most, it doesn't come necessarily from greatly positive feelings, but I feel like there's a lot of strength in the response. It's definitely not just sort of complaining. I think there's a lot of imagining a future.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Mark's work, which I've always been impressed by, and in fact, he describes his work as being like a socket or a battery. You want to get people charged, understandably so, more so now because of the Trump presidency?
Well, absolutely. The essay that you're referring to, in the essay that you're referring to that was brought on here by your colleagues at KQED, I say that art is not a bridge, it's a battery. And by that, what I meant was art is very often positioned as a pathway to common ground. But I actually think that I don't want to make a bridge to a value system that I don't agree with in any way. I will, through my creative practices, make a bridge to an inspired future, one that's inclusive and harbors the imagination or harbors the strength of the imagination in really proactive and positive ways. So art, yes, is a bridge to an imagined landscape where we're all included and our political enfranchisement is prime.
Well, the essay you mentioned, you talk about ascendancy with the Trump administration of white supremacy, of patriarchy, and of corporate victory over science and over, well, the arts, not yet. That's the resistance here that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And you really do see art as a catalyst for that resistance. Yeah?
It has to be. I mean, I don't know. So often our journalists, by creed, take a more neutral position in trying to illuminate the facts as they are without verging on polemics. And I understand that. And certainly our politicians have to take a different tack, one that will get them elected and one that appeases their, you know, supposed constituencies. So where does freedom of speech most aptly lie? And I think that's in our creatives, that's in our artists, our musicians, our poets, our writers. These are the people that, generally speaking, give us vocabulary, give us a visual culture, and give us a sonic bed to celebrate in bleak times or in a pessimistic environment. We find color through the lens of the artists among us.
And again, Mark Bamudi Joseph here with us in studio is poet, dancer, and chief of the program in pedagogy at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. His latest multimedia theatrical experience is called Peloto. And Ingrid Rojas Contreras is also with us, a Bay Area-based writer, literature critic, and co-founder of 100 Days Action. What is that action? What's the initiative?
100 Days Action is a platform that invites the community to pitch actions that can be either made at home or in the world. And they're replicable actions, and they're artistic in nature. And we've had...
Give us some examples.
Yeah, we've had, for example, we've done projects that go from instilling joy. And we've had interventions at protests. For example, we had a dancing brigade of women of color. We've done panel talks. We publish a lot of poetry. And we've also hosted several events where people can come and engage in a artistic counter narratives. One of the things that we did is we held a inaugural ball where we invited the community to come and take the oath of office on a book of their choosing, and they could choose.
Was this the book that essentially Alejandro Mejia took and burned? Was that at that event?
No, that was at that was at the Litquake.
It was at Litquake, yeah.
Reading, yeah.
So you're really again trying to spur action here.
Yeah, we believe that when there's a gesture that's powerful, that is abstract, and when many people engage with that action and replicate it, it carries its own power and it becomes a very powerful thing, like a snowball. And so we are all about, I very much agree with Mark about art being a battery.
It's also, since you mentioned poetry, I can't help thinking about, I'd like to quote Shelley's line, you know, about poetry being, the poets being the unacknowledged legislators of mm-hmm. civilization,
so
really.
True.
I think he was talking about, but how we turn poetry into, use Mark's title here, pedagogy, or how we turn it into a teaching experience as opposed to just something to experience and absorb. Big question.
We were very much inspired by Yoko Ono's instructional poems. And one of them is Scream Against the Wall, Against the World in the Street, something like this, paraphrasing. And what struck us about that is that if we could get poets to give instructional actions to the community, that it was a small way to enact change, even if it's the change of how we feel.
But as someone who studies literature, you know, there's the critics who say literature should bring about social change, it should reflect social justice, and then those who say, well, no, the important thing about literature is it should please, entertain, maybe move us emotionally, but forget all that social, political stuff. That's a separate silo. What do you say to that?
I believe that the personal is political, and that there are many layers.
You're too young to be part of the '60s.
I know, but I am a daughter of that thinking. I think, and art can move us, and it can move us emotionally, and it can move us in a political direction, whether we recognize it as such.
Let's bring Daniel Riera into this discussion. He's a music director and a flute player, also electronic wind instrument player with Soltron, a local band that, as I said earlier, fuses salsa, hip-hop, samba, and rock, and music and resistance. Talk about the connection for you, Daniel.
Sure. Well, to me, all my favorite music growing up was music of resistance. And I feel like this...
Examples?
Like Bob Marley, like Marvin Gaye... like Public Enemy, that type of righteous anger. And
where do you see that in Marvin Gaye?
In What's Going On, that album.
Yeah,
that
whole album.
That
yeah.
whole album, yeah. That was on heavy rotation growing up, thanks to my mom's big Marvin Gaye fan. And then on my dad's side, I was listening to Afro-Cuban music, rumba, and, you know, the religious music of Cuba, which is really African music, comes from Africa, that tradition. So those are kind of like the two elements or some of the elements that we're mixing together in Soltron.
Well, let's have our listeners hear a little example of Soltron. This is tell us a little bit about this Arroz con Gandules from Soltron's self-titled album.
Yeah. So Arroz con Gandules. Means rice and beans. So it's a very traditional Puerto Rican dish. And it's a cheap food. It's kind of a poor people food, but it's also one of the most delicious and satisfying. And so the song is kind of about like what our culture means to us on a daily basis, you know, when you're struggling to survive, how those simple dishes can really sustain you.
How food can sustain you. In fact, we're going to hear that later on in this segment, but I thought we'd hear Stand Up first. Tell us about that.
Okay, Stand Up. Well, the chorus goes, stand up against the threat of big business. It's war and the mission, money versus tradition. But we're still here, me and my tribe, trying to thrive while outside two worlds collide.
Let's hear.
Against the threat of big business, a world with a mission, money versus tradition, stand up. We still here, me and my tribe, trying to thrive, while outside two worlds collide. Stand up, against the threat of big business, a world with a mission, money versus tradition, stand up. Try to thrive while outside two worlds collide.
has a that combination is in there, isn't it? It's a, I mean, I'm thinking hip hop, salsa, samba, and rock. So you bring those together, and when you're telling people to stand up, you're saying my tribe, but also everybody should stand up, really, just not my tribe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's also another line in that song. It says every city and state can relate. Time to collaborate. And yeah, when we wrote this song originally, we were just thinking about the Mission District in San Francisco, which is
where your roots are. Yeah.
Yes, where our roots are, and it's undergoing massive gentrification along with the rest of the city. But
there's a shift because you used to write songs about the gentrification. Now you're writing these kind of broader political.
Yes, and I think that's as a result of Donald Trump. Like our focus has had to expand. I think from just our local community, but seeing the events that are playing out all over the country. And kind of music as resistance, you know, coming back to that, I think actually what art is going to be in the era of Trump, I think you're going to see a lot more resistance music, a lot more powerful music and all forms of art. You know, I think this is kind of the moment we've been waiting for in a way, because to me, the best art is created under circumstances like that.
We're seeing it actually transformative. Chloe Veltman, the sort of thing that Daniel just alluded to.
Transformative in what sense, Michael?
Well, in other words, people moving, like he was writing songs about gentrification, now he's writing songs about, you know, resistance.
Are we seeing more of that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely say so. I think, you know, while we're doing a survey more, for the most part, of local Bay Area-based artists, I mean, a lot of the projects have a national or even international feel. Been in touch lately with a group of comic book artists, and you know they're doing a project with 100 different comics, and yes, I mean they come from all over the world. And this, it's interesting really, because we put this call out via social media for people to get in touch with us to give us information about their projects and what they might know that for us to maybe incorporate into our coverage. I mean, there's a lot of people coming to us who are not Bay Area based, and so I think it definitely feels like this is a bigger focus than just
you
the
talk
Bay Area.
About international. I was looking at some German cartooning, and they have, you know, actually it was a big float in which they had Trump raping the Statue of Liberty. This
I
sort
saw
of thing.
That.
I mean, it gets pretty explicit. But also, I mean, cartoonists Saturday Night Live is working, you know, in a kind of art form with Alec Baldwin and. There's a lot that's happening, a lot that's erupting, and some of it's fascinating, and some of it, you know, as is always the case with art, is really good, and some of it is not so good. But mm-hmm. I'd like to hear from listeners, we got a lot of artists out there who listen to this program. How has the Trump administration affected you as an artist, or how do you think it's affected the art that you consume or that you enjoy or that you are part of let's say, a fan or as a participant in the works themselves, talking about artists who have vision and create, but also those who enjoy art and who appreciate it and who feel strongly about it. I'd like to hear from you. And also we can talk about, and I think we need to talk about, cutbacks, because those do loom on the horizon. And many people are greatly affected by this, particularly in San Francisco, which has gone through so much gentrification and now faces some serious problems about artists surviving with the cost of living and so forth. So let me open the phone lines and invite your participation in the program. We do want to hear from you, and our toll-free number is available to you. That number is 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us now. What do you see as a difference out there now in terms of the art world? We're talking about literature, music. We're talking about really the whole range of the arts. And has it affected you? And has it affected you not only perhaps as an artist, aspiring or otherwise, but as someone who appreciates the arts? You can join us also by emailing us. And the email address is simply forum@kqed.org. We invite your questions, your comments, your participation that way as well. Or go online, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Some comments coming in here. Jonathan writes, after the election, art is much more urgent and less fun. It's a way to articulate the fear, anger, and dread that has spread across large swaths of the country. Personally, I drew 100 portraits of Trump leading up to the inauguration. It was a sort of coping strategy, I suppose. Unfortunately, no one wants to buy a picture of 45 and hang it over his or her couch. Funny stuff. But we realize, to some extent, the truth of what he's saying here. Maybe anybody, any of you artists want to comment? Less fun?
I want to jump in here and say that actually there is some... There's a lot of comedy and a lot of fun that's being brought to this. I mean, the video that Claudia Escobar of KQED Arts made of Soltron Daniel. Uh-huh. I mean, of course, there's a strong political message there, but it's a really fun piece. I mean, you're in this laundromat and you're kind of rocking out. It's definitely fun.
Yeah, and I don't think the two are mutually exclusive at all. In fact, it's really fun when you transform that anger and that anxiety and you channel it into something celebratory, something jubilant. And that's what we're trying to do on stage when we play.
Well, here's an interesting pushback item I'd like to get some response from. Sean says, where were the Bay Area artists when Obama bombed civilians in the Middle East and deported the highest numbers of people in recent history? Or do artists only show up when the president has an R in front of their name?
Artists are always here. So I think that it's reductive and... spouts of privilege when we make claims that artists aren't consistently here. As artists are often invisibilized until there's a particular spotlight that's put on us because the political tone would suggest that some level of levity and optimism is necessary and also creative opposition and patriotic dissent.
But Mark, you understand what I think he's saying. The subtext is you didn't go after Obama, you're going after Trump, or you're affected by Trump more than you were by Obama.
We're affected more by this particular individual because of his high level of xenophobia, racism, and sexism. The tone, as someone who is married to a kindergarten teacher who has two children, one in middle school, one in high school, I understand that the tone of dignity that the Obama administration made present, not that, you know, the history of this country isn't fraught with imperialism, but just the tone of dignity and civility that Obama brought to the White House is something that we could stand behind even when we opposed his legislation and military action. The person that's in the White House right now, who is staunchly anti-immigrant and vociferously sexist in his actions, that's not something that we can stand beside. Someone has to set a different kind of tone. And if it's not going to be our political pundits, and if it's not going to be our elected officials, then the creatives among us have to create a different kind of environment.
All right, we're going to hear from some creators, and as promised, we're also going to hear some music from Soltron as we go out here. When we return, we'll take your calls, lots of them coming in, and we do again want to hear from you, so let us know your thoughts about this topic, which is all about artists responding to Trump presidency. That's Aros Gandules from Soltron's self-titled album. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Bay Area artists responding to the Trump presidency, and some of those artists are here with us in studio, Mark Bermudi-Joseph and Ingrid Rojas Contreras and Daniel Riera. We also have Chloe Veltman, senior arts editor for KQED, with us. And here's some comments coming in from artists out there who are listening. Natalie tweets, I'm writing a set of empowering choral works for young women's voices using feminist texts from some of my heroes. Allegra says, tired of our so-called president's use of Twitter, I created a doll where I could stick a pin into his potty mouth each time he tweets. I ran out of pins, so I decided I would remove and replace a different pin each time he tweets. And here's Julian, says, I'm a rapper and performer very much dealing with the reality and subject matter of Trump as a president. On the one hand, he's an easy target who constantly gives new material via tweets and blunders. On the other hand, you have epic themes playing out. Immigration is a threat versus immigration is a fundamental element of American culture. The importance of truth in the beginning of the fake news era, the recurring crusade of Christian conservatives versus Muslim radicals. It makes you more motivated to do your best work and tackle the difficult topics. And every head is nodding in here. So let's go to your calls. So let's begin with Mimi. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Glad.
So you were asking how the Trump presidency has affected me personally as an artist. I graduated with a degree in fine arts, but I've worked pretty much my entire life as a commercial artist in animation and illustration. It's affected me because I was just getting close to retiring, and I was going to start creating my own art for a change. And that's just not going to happen now because I think my health care is probably going to be affected. And also, you know, I need to make some money because he needs to be fought with money. I'm an environmentalist, and I've only been able to donate 5% of my income a year to the NRDC, places like that. I'm going to keep working so I can keep giving them money and keep up the fight to save our planet.
All right. We thank you for the call and carry on. Let me get another caller in here. That's Mary. Mary, welcome.
Hi. So I've done interactive participatory work for 10 years, which helps people tell their stories and show people their common, you know, threads between them and get past their differences. And this has been really important to me. But since the presidency, I mean, first it was in shock and horror and, you know, going to lots of marches and donating a lot. But now it feels like vitally important to tell the stories of immigrants and people in prisons and, you know, people who've been victims of abuse, you know, women who've been, or, you know, people who are transgender. It's like suddenly the marginalized people, I feel like it's life and death. I have to tell those stories now.
How do you tell those stories, and, Mary? You write stories?
No, I do interactive installations where people... Sometimes it's people responding to questions that I've asked them on the street, and I, like, may embroider those responses into my installation later. Or sometimes it's I did a thing called Identity Tapestry where people sort of circle statements about who they are and so they can see what they have in common with each other. And so it's an introspective but also a way of people seeing what they share. And so that can help people bridge their differences, and I've seen that happen in real time. But now it's like I feel like I need to tell the stories of the people in prison. I need to, like, get, you know, visualizations of what they're going through or their writing into a visual installation.
Well, good luck with your work, and thank you so much for joining us on Forum this morning. Appreciate your calling in, and in fact, here's a listener, Marco, who tweets, in the current political state, let me go to you on this, Daniel Riera. Music has become my escape, distraction, and remedy for the anxiety and tension of the everyday.
Yeah, well, music, I think in addition to being an escape and a remedy, certainly it's healing when you have a group of people that are dancing and grooving to the same music. But it's also a way of sharing culture, too. I feel like probably food and music are the two pathways that people, maybe the first contact with another culture. And so I hope that with our music that we can, like, not like you were saying, Mark, to build a bridge to a bad ideology that you don't agree with. But I see it more as building a bridge to people's hearts. And then from there, they may decide that their ideology that they held before is no longer sustainable in the face of this new information.
Well, I want to read a comment from a listener named Caitlin who says, this year I decided to rejoin a choir as a means of creating beauty and unity in this time of social and political shouting matches and vitriol. Singing again has been both an act of resistance and a means of joy, reconnecting with myself and others. And Ingrid, let me go to you. Literature and Trump, how's that work for you?
For me, after the election, I heard from a lot of my writer friends that we were all having a really hard time showing up to the keyboard and producing work. And I think there was a shift at some point where it became important to produce something that would counteract the narrative that we were hearing that was divisive or just, you know, hateful. And I think since then, I've talked to a lot of writers who, and myself included, we are tired. We do feel exhausted by reading the news every day.
Just internalizing the news.
Yeah, right? Internalizing it. But there is, I think artists do have that gift of seeing what's out there and then turning it within themselves and then producing something that is beautiful or that is welcoming. And I have been able to do that, which makes me very happy.
Keeps you from exhaustion too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It gives you energy, creative energy.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too, because a lot of the projects that we're looking at have this participatory element. It seems to be a running thread through a lot of the projects that are coming to us through our Google form, through emails we're receiving. We're doing a story. I think it's airing. It's running on Friday on our website. It's about an environmental justice story, and it's about how people are coming together and using crochet to tell an environmental story. And the community aspect of that project is what people are saying is the most powerful thing about it. You know, beyond the work that the professional artists are doing, they're kind of almost facilitators, although they're great artists too.
I think that's a really important point.
It's Mark Bamudi, Joseph.
At Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, we have a fellowship where we ask folks, can we design freedom? And having people come together to respond to that question in what we call our public square is one of a number of institutional responses that I think creative art centers are have to find themselves responsible for propagating this thing where people coming together, whether it's on the dance floor or at the crochet needles, right, coming together outside of digital space or outside of, you know, social media space is healing and totally necessary.
Yeah, speaking of crochet needles, here's Heidi who writes, I've been knitting for 13 years now. I recently entered the craftivism movement and have begun knitting items that stand up for human rights. I designed a uterus pattern hat. I've also combined my science with knitting and designed a resistor hat for the Science March that features an electronic circuit with a battery and resistors. There's your battery again, Mark. And here's some more calls. Megan joins us. Megan, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome. Yeah.
I'm a winemaker, which I have always viewed it as an art form. And I believe that we need a fight with money. So I'm using the art that I know how to do. We are producing a label called Uphold, which 100% of the profits will go to support organizations that work towards women's rights, equal rights, and the rights for the planet.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you for sharing that with us. And by the way, we have a video of Mark's performance up on our website and a video of Soltron on our website. And we have a link to Mark's essay as well and Ingrid's piece for KQED Arts about literature and Trump. And we're going to go to more of your phone calls. First, just a comment from Bob here. Local poet and artist Adrian Arias has an exhibition at Studio Grand in Oakland called Ángeles en Tiempos de Dictadura, or Angels in Times of a Dictatorship. Mm-hmm. He's also started putting a stamp on pictures of his art and poetry that says, Made by an Immigrant. Mm-hmm. Here's Robert. Robert, join us.
Yes, Michael. Thank you for my call. I'm going to try and make a long story brief, but I was a chef in five-star hotels and became recognized as a world-class innovative chef, and I was struggling to make a living, and somehow I thought, you know what, I'm going to do what my first love was, which was in the fine arts, and so I ended up being in an art show in Berkeley last October and November, and it was specifically for the show in reference to the argument that Donald Trump attempted to start with the Pope after he gave the encyclical address about the stranger and about these people fleeing war. And it was a special exhibition specifically for that. And I was so profoundly touched by the work in it that I decided to specifically get more into my writing, and have since sent endless poetry to the White House. Hoping that they will wake up and smell their coffee.
Good luck. I don't know how many people in this White House appreciate poetry. We've got a lot of folks who are generals and Goldman Sachs type people. I don't know that they're poetry readers, but who knows? I think about Wallace Stevens, who was an insurance executive, one of the great poets of the 20th century, and also said that he thought Dwight D. Eisenhower was much too liberal. Let me go to another comment here from Hannah, who writes, President Trump inspires art, especially the comedic arts, because he provides so much material. His messages are intentionally provocative, and art, both pro and anti-Trump, are a reaction to that. Perhaps President Obama just didn't provide as much material because he didn't provoke such huge reactions. You say huge reaction. Yeah. I wasn't here to remember what effect his initial inauguration had on the arts. Anthony writes, have your guests explicitly sought out disability art activists? Disability art is not nearly ubiquitous, but the latest politics hit our community very hard. Chloe?
Yeah, we do have some stories in the pipeline for 100 Days Art in the Age of Trump that are dealing with this very issue. Cy Musica, one of our reporters who works in radio and on the web, is doing a story about a community of deaf artists who are based in Oakland, and they're working on a project. It's a photograph. A photography project. The photos are very striking, and it involves different community members emblazoning a word, an important word to them on their chest, and you see the photographs. And so Cy is doing reporting on this project, and we're going to have a story soon about that.
And again, Chloe Veltman is senior arts editor for KQED, and Noah is our next caller. Noah, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. So, yeah, I'm a musician in San Francisco in a band called The New Up. And we have found ourselves kind of having more of an unconscious effect from this whole thing, just naturally writing more about what we all have in common and some of the themes that we all share. And also, we've tried to, you know, there was a tradition, I think, you know, especially in the 60s, of having music be part of a movement for social change. And we've really tried to start that back up again with our music. And you know, Trump also sucks up so much air in the room that when you're trying to get your art out there, it really has a huge effect on that too, because there's already not a lot of space in the news cycle for art. And what little was left, you know, kind of has been shoved out. So, I mean, I could go on and on about the ways that this has affected us. But, you know, the new album we just released has songs that we thought we were writing about oppression in the wider world and authoritarianism. And it just so happened right when it came out that Trump got elected. And then we realized that we actually were writing it about our own country, which we weren't expecting. So thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. Social consciousness certainly been a pervasive part of Bay Area culture, but it's rising in different ways. I think that's what we're hearing here. And also, just had a comment on the fact that there have been studies about authoritarianism. We did a whole program on Trump and authoritarianism with David Frum, who writes for The Atlantic. And authoritarianism can often breed more, not only resistance in art, but just breed more art, more creativity. It's curious. You were kind of talking about that, Ingrid. I mean, sort of the effect it had on you.
Yeah. We've also seen with 100 Days Action, we've seen so many different people submit gestures to us from, we've had artists who are incarcerated at San Quentin. We've had like a group of mothers who are surfers who proposed an action. We've had emerging artists, established artists, and we've had people who don't identify as artists who have proposed artistic gestures. So I do think that there is I think we do have a natural desire to change what we see into what we want it to be. And I think that's what's been happening.
Yeah, you wanted to say something, Daniel Riera?
Yeah, I think it gets back to this law of physics, right? Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So if Trump is out there saying he's going to take away our freedoms, he's degrading our ethnicities, you know, in on the public stage, then we're going to react and take even more pride in ourselves. We're going to do our art even harder. If he says he's going to cut the funding to the arts in this country, then we need to donate more. I know I have just signed up as a supporter of KQED. And
well, you know, here's some pushback. Let me get your response to this. Daniel, anybody else who wants to respond? Joe says, all I've been hearing is Trump bad, us good. How is all this hatred and acidic language? I don't know if I've been hearing hatred or acidic language, but that's what he's hearing. Aimed at our president and his supporters any different than what they're accusing him of?
I would say, you know, when we created 100 Days Action, one of the things that we were responding to was just, well, the 100-day plan and how the language in that plan flattened out all the issues. There didn't seem to be any complexity left. It was just, we're going to defend our country. This is how we're going to do it. And leaving anything else out that might be an issue. And we wanted to create a platform that would bring nuance back into the conversation. And I don't think it's not corrective in the way that we think that we are doing good, but it's corrective in the way that we want to bring complexity back into the conversation.
And we'll bring more of our callers back into the conversation. We'll go Barry in Sonoma. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call and for focusing on this wonderful subject. I just wanted to make a comment that my work has taken a whole new direction since all this has been happening. I've been a portrait painter for 40 years, doing mostly families, kids, and dogs. And while that's lovely to be able to pay tribute to these, you know, family members, now I'm doing something called the Global Stewards Project, which is painting portraits of incredible leaders like Jane Goodall, who are doing all these positive things to make change and working really, really hard, doing things I wish I could be out doing. And I'm doing portraits of these leaders and then giving them to them to thank them on behalf of all of us who wish we could be out there doing more. With me, painting is what I can do, and this is sort of an act of love and appreciation and tribute to good leaders, which we sorely need right now.
All right, Barry, appreciate hearing from you, and I thank you for the call. Lisa writes, I've been painting the American flag for 2 years, but since Trump, I found that celebrating patriotism in multiple forms is urgent. There are so many ways to be American. Each of my paintings is different, but they are all American flags celebrating the USA. Jasper Johns comes to mind immediately. Mm-hmm. Here's Anna writes, even young artists are motivated to comment and push back in this political climate. Check out the exhibit Collective Futures at the Sanchez Contemporary Art Gallery in Uptown Oakland, featuring work by 6th to 12th grade student artists. And this gives me hope in these challenging times. And we'll bring more of your calls on. Here we go to Bruce next. Bruce, thank you for waiting.
Yeah, hi. My name's Bruce Beasley. I'm a Bay Area sculptor. I've been an active Bay Area sculptor for 55 years, and my comment is that the American art scene, whether it's painting, sculpture, dance, music, literature, or whatever, is the most active and vibrant in the world. And the Republicans are simply embarrassing themselves. If they're trying to make some kind of gesture by reducing us to be the only major country to not have the equivalent of an arts department in the federal government, just simply is let them bear the shame of their own ignorance and lack of culture, that they would make some kind of gesture to eliminate that small agency that doesn't really do as much as it should anyway. So American artists are going to continue to do wonderful work that will have influence and effect on the rest of the world, and let the Republicans just show themselves to be the mean-spirited, anti-cultural people that they are.
All right, Bruce. Rather strong partisan statement, but thank you for that call. I'm going to read a comment from a listener named Ann who says, I'm a classical soprano in the Bay Area. I'd grown tired of feeling stagnated by my anger and fear while also worrying that my creative work was irrelevant. I've decided to channel my anger and anxiety and take action. Along with a string quartet and composer I'm currently collaborating with, we've dedicated ourselves to championing a new song cycle to raise awareness about the need for greater gender parity in STEM subjects. The piece is about the life and work of Ada Lovelace, a brilliant mathematician who was born too early and whose work was not recognized in her lifetime because of her gender. more of your calls. Let me go next to Deandra. Morning.
Good morning, Michael. Hey, I'm an East Bay artist, and I've been doing stuff for a long time in response to one of your caller's statements that where were we around Obama? Well, I've been doing art against Obama and Bush and all the way along. But this is a different animal. It's not just that Trump has put out all of these racist and misogynist statements and acts, but he's actually taking away the basic fabric of civil rights, civil liberties in this country. It's not a pejorative, in my opinion, to call it a fascist. And you go back and look at the trajectory of Hitler, and it's the same thing. So I'm doing this art to kind of like sound an alarm in the name of all humanity. I mean, Hitler didn't have his finger on the nuke button, for one thing. And his denial of facts, his denial of science, his denial of, like, diversity, I mean, it's absolutely where he is taking this country. While we are protesting around immigration and other things that we need to protest, he is setting in stone a real fascist agenda that we all are going to suffer with unless we drive them out.
All right. I thank you for the call. And Mark Bermudi, Joseph, while he was talking and talking about art as an alarm, you kind of gave your assent to verbally. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, there's a signal to noise ratio, and there's so much noise coming out of the White House right now. Artists have to pitch their signal, have to pitch their frequency above that in some kind of way.
In order to be heard or seen? Well,
yeah. Both. And because there's a particular box around with the denial, let's say, of the New York Times, the LA Times, CNN, out of the latest press gaggle, you can only imagine that portends a further silencing of the critical voice of journalism and the media. Artists who traditionally make themselves powerfully and vocally visible, we chart 1967, this is the 50th year anniversary of the Summer of Love. You can chart a cultural trajectory from that point forward in the Bay Area alone. And these are folks that generally bring together in harmonious, peaceful, and celebratory accord, still providing, as Ingrid says, a counter narrative to the dominant political narrative. And so that's the accountability that we have, not only to the present moment, but to the historical record.
Well, I was just thinking about how the president plays a role also as a critic. When Meryl Streep gets up, for example, and speaks about, and great artist, an actor, it speaks about negative things that she feels she's concerned about and people ought to be concerned about the president. He comes back and says, she's not a very good actress.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So he becomes a critic. Go to more of your calls here. Let me go to Alexandra next. Alexandra, you're on.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I really look up to all of you on the panel, and I have an idea for a new art installation. Just kind of, it's interactive, bringing people together, where you're yelling and screaming, letting out all this primal expression. And I guess my question is, where do I get started with this? And do you have any, I guess, ideas or... Yeah.
She's looking for advice, some wisdom.
Yeah.
I mean, I might suggest that you put a call out on social media or just gather a group of your nearest and dearest and find a space and tell people you're doing it and just do it. You know, you're talking about the body expressing itself. You don't need fancy equipment. You just need the human voice, people in place. Do it.
Here's a listener named Chess who says, this year marks the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus 40th year. They were scheduled to have a world tour, but after the turn of political events, they felt they needed to shift gears and do a tour of the red southern states called the Lavender Pen Tour in reference to Harvey Milk. The Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir felt compelled to join them. I am part of the choir. We aim to spread empathy, inclusiveness, healing, hope, and love. I'm terrified of Trump's America in the South, but this is truly necessary and historical. Here's Michael from Menlo Park. Michael, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Michael. I am a painter, and I've been blessed and fortunate to have organizations like the United States Department of Commerce, the United States Department of Interior, NASA, to either ask me to to make paintings that articulate an issue or a development, and also to speak at their events, usually decoding my work. Now, this year, by the way, so I would always have events with them last year or the years before. Now I wouldn't even dare call my buddies at NASA or any of those other U.S. federal government organizations, because I know the decision makers there are frightened, really frightened, of showing any art that might interpret anything that Trump has taken a position on. But now, I want to say I'm very proud of Stanford. On June 23rd, they are holding their annual Silicon Valley Energy Summit, and probably there might be somebody from the Trump administration there. There'll be about 400 people. And I will be showing in the lobby of this palatial building where the event is going to be held a 24-foot painting, Resilience of America in the Era of Trump.
Why, that's quite a spectacle to behold, I think, and thank you for letting us know about it. Here's a contrarian for a moment. Pete says, I would suggest that any moment spent contemplating Trump and his unreality is antithetical to one's creative process. It's a very different voice heard from. Thank you all for your participation in this hour, which went quite swimmingly, and it was good to hear of your work and good to hear of what you're doing. And Chloe, I want to remind people, actually, you can go on our website. And
yeah, I mean, we've been hearing from so many people with interesting projects and ideas. If you go to kqed.org/arts, please submit them to us. There's a form there, and we'd love to hear from you, no matter what your
whatever your reason, Trump or no Trump, yeah. Right? Okay. Thank you, Chloe Veltman. Thank you, Mark Barmudi-Joseph. Thank you, Ingrid Rojas Contreras. And thank you, Daniel Riera. And thank you, our listeners. We would not be here without you. And we are here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Jeremy Siegel. Our engineer is Howard Gelman. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our executive producer is Holly Kernan. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.